Hello, and you are listening to I'm a Diva podcast, a podcast dedicated to promoting our female creatives in the music industry. So if you are any form of creator, a dedicated participant in the music industry, then we are here to promote you, to share your story, to share your challenges, and to grow together and to have some fun along the way and learn a thing or two. You are listening to I'm a Diva podcast. I'm a GV. I'm a female rapper in the music industry, growing to develop my career and facing challenges and noticing how females are underrepresented. This is why I decided to create this podcast for all of you to listen to and to promote our wonderful females and to be able to connect with others and learn from each other. So I welcome you to I'm a Diva podcast. Hello, and you're listening to I'm a Diva podcast. This is your talk show host, Edgy V, and we're back with another amazing episode. This is season 3. Episode 4. So today we're talking to a producer, songwriter, vocalist, and multidisciplinary artist, Lisa Murray. So she fuses her creativity and unique production style with honest and narrative storytelling to create a soundtrack of modern life and love. Her tongue-in-cheek with wit goes hand-in-hand with the raw expression of emotion in her songwriting process, detailing the charming tragedy of modern womanhood. As a producer, Lisa fuses 80s nostalgia with cutting-edge vocal production that allows listeners to dive deep into her sonic world.
See you over there at the record store. Artists from A to Z, but you won't find what you're looking for. You want the kind of love from the records in these aisles. Then you look my way, we exchange a smile. We exchange a glance, temporary romance. Boy, you've already fallen, this is out of my hands. But honey, be careful, 'cause I'm the kind of girl boys like you fall for. I'm the kind of girl you long to.
So, hi Lisa, thank you so much for coming on.
Hi, thank you for that lovely introduction.
Well, my pleasure, my pleasure. So to anybody that doesn't know, myself and Lisa, we go a little bit way back and we're finally glad to have her jump on. She's done so much with her music career since I met her. She's studied in Spain, was it not?
Yeah, in Berklee College of Music on their Valencia campus.
Yeah, which is an incredible journey, I'm sure. And I'd love to hear a little bit more about it. So I guess we can start there and kind of say, Where did, you know, your inspiration towards music that was like, okay, I really want to do this and really want to start my journey in music. When did it all start for you and what did you start with?
Yeah, well, my music journey goes back to being a kid at 7 and learning how to play piano. So I've always had like that musical streak in my life. Like when I was a kid, like I said, I started playing piano. And then I remember at one point I was like, hey, whoa, I can sing, like I'm singing along to this Avril Lavigne CD and I'm hitting the same notes that Avril is hitting, like this is cool, like maybe I should start singing more. And then, you know, went into choirs and musicals all throughout my teenage years and just like really continuing to pursue that and always writing songs along the way. Like I think I started writing when I was 11, just like really bad songs that were pretty much like Avril Lavigne songs that I just changed the lyrics slightly of and were like, I wrote a song. So yeah, that was the whole journey started when I was really young. I've always been very musical. I've got a really musical family. And then, yeah, when I went to decide what I wanted to study in college, I was like, I think I'm going to study music. Okay. I was like, you know, I kind of could have studied anything, but I knew music was going to be something I was going to be actually passionate about. So I started to study music with no real direction, especially no direction towards production or music tech, just sort of knew I loved being on stage, knew I loved performing, knew I loved creating music and being in that scene. So I decided to study music and I studied that at Trinity College Dublin. And then when I was there, I discovered music tech and I was like, what the hell? Like, this is how records are made. I want to do this as my job. So yeah, just through like mandatory modules I had to take during my first and second year at Trinity that were in the music tech side of things, along with, you know, 15th century counterpoint and 18th century harmony. And I was like, what the hell's going on? And I really started to love all the music tech modules, and I really found a way to express myself creatively within that scene and within that sphere. So then I declared my major as a music tech major. And that's sort of when I really started to dive deep into the world of production, and I did my thesis on that. And yeah, and then after Trinity, I got accepted into Berklee College of Music to pursue my master's degree in, it's a mouthful, music production, technology and innovation, which was absolutely iconic. It was so much fun. So I went over to Valencia, Spain right after I finished up my degree. And then I came home because of COVID in the middle of my master's in March, and continued to learn how to do everything from home. Got my home little home studio set up. Yeah, and since then I've been doing different bits. I worked at Camden Recording Studios for a while last year as an engineer. And yeah, I've been doing a lot of remote collaborations, a lot of remote production and engineering. And I've most recently released my debut single, which is a self-produced indie pop bop. So yeah, I've been busy.
Indie pop bop. I feel like I have to say it because I won't be able to say it. Wow, let's just put it that way. Everything that you mentioned there just shows like how deep you kind of were willing to go for, you know, your passion for music. And it seems like you've explored so many different aspects. I've also noticed on your stories as well, you're always putting up stories about and little updates you have in your little home studio, which I love to see,
because yes,
your aesthetic is like on point. You're like very clean, kind of white, you know, white kind of pieces of the kind of decor kind of style. Yeah, definitely love that. So I've also noticed that you've always been posting about kind of doing an online, you coach online as well in terms of like music technology, isn't it? So tell us a little bit about that. How's that been going and navigating to kind of teaching people online?
Yeah, it's actually been crazy. I think I was quite well prepped for the pandemic post-studying, because we had to learn remotely. So, you know, we kind of got 1 week's notice, everybody go home, the campus is closed, and all of our professors who work actively in like the live scene and the studio scene all were completely out of work. So we were just sort of sitting on Zoom together, our professors at Berklee and us, and they were like, yeah, so we're going to try to figure out how to do this whole master's program completely via Zoom. And nobody had any experience with that before. So it was really interesting, because as our professors were learning how to teach us online, we were learning how to learn online and how to collaborate online. So like different things like using Audio Movers, which is a plugin that lets you transmit high quality audio with like almost zero latency. These little things are like Zoom and how to like, you know, control people's screens using their DAWs and all this kind of stuff. I really got into a good swing of that because I had no choice. And then I ended up just working with a great vocalist and electronic artist from Ireland, actually, called Gillian Nova. And she works with in a duo called Darkroom Data. And she's like, I want somebody to teach me how to do vocal production. I want to like get a workflow going. I want to set myself up so that when I'm recording at home, I can do it all properly. And then that's sort of just where that whole side of my work started. Was I did loads of sessions with her, just sort of like, you know, controlling her Logic session, setting up templates for her, getting her like plugins and settings that she really likes, making sure that she's like using her mic properly, everything set up, and then just coaching her through the performances, giving harmony ideas, giving like structural ideas, you know, oh, maybe we'll add doubles here, maybe we'll add, you know, thing. And in a lot of ways, it's similar to doing a normal session, because, you know, usually in the studio, you'll be in one room and the artist is in another room. And it's almost the same thing, because I'm listening back completely critically on my monitors here through Audio Movers, and she's at home in her vocal booth, you know, and she's doing the vocals. So once you kind of overcome the barriers of what your mind thinks is going to be strange about it, it's actually very similar. You're talking through a window kind of at somebody, and you're giving them instructions on what to do. And in a lot of ways, it can actually be a bit clearer to work with people this way, because it's so direct, and you have to be so like there's no like, oh yeah, maybe. You just have to say it as it is. You just have to lay it out there, like, and be very honest and very open, because communication is so important over Zoom calls and that kind of thing. So yeah, and then I just started doing that with like loads of other people, and working on different vocal projects with people, because I love vocal production. It's like my favorite part of the whole music tech sphere is just getting killer vocals for people, and I will go to the ends of the earth to get somebody the right vocal. Like it's a bit much. I'm a bit pedantic about it, but I love it.
I love that. No, but like at the end of the day, when it comes to a person choosing who they want to work with, I would want to work with someone like that. That's just gonna, you know, they're gonna go bend over backwards to get those results, because in the end, you know, whether you like it or not, once you record something and once it's out there, it's kind of going to be standing the test of time and in reflection to who you are as an artist as you progress forward. And you want to go back and say, I got the best results that I could in that space of time. And that's kind of what you want. So, you know, if people have someone like you around, they're going to be pretty confident that that's going to be okay. That's going to be okay.
I think it's one of those things as well. Like when I work with a lot of vocalists who haven't really done that much recording before, but maybe they've done a lot of gigging. And in the live sphere, and when you're in a room and when you're on a speaker system or you're over a PA, there's so much places you can actually hide because your voice is reflecting off all these different surfaces. It's like the atmosphere and the mood in the room is going to completely change people's perception of how you sound and all of this stuff. But yeah, in the studio space, there is way less room to hide because it's just you and your microphone. And really, when you start to break down small things like how different phrases are sung and how different sounds come through, you can really extract an awful lot of meaning and context from a vocal that a lot of people do overlook because they're like, okay, cool, we got a really great beat going and we've got a really great guitar sound and a really great bass sound. Oh, now let's just get the singer to sing three times and then we'll be done. But really, when you hone in on those details, you can get a really killer performance from any vocalist and any artist.
That's amazing, actually, now that you said it, because it kind of really goes to show, like, when we go back to thinking about all of our favorite songs and all of our favorite parts of, like, the vocals where we want to listen to it over and over and over again, the reality is that, like, why do we want to listen to them over and over, over, over again? And why do we get so obsessed with, like, the way the hook was sang or the harmonies were done? It's because, like you said, the importance of breaking those little sections down and kind of really saying, okay, well, what was done here and how can I recreate that? So I like that you're emphasizing that so much, because it kind of is something that's totally overlooked, and I totally agree with you. Now, in terms of kind of like you getting into like technology and musical technology and innovation and all of that kind of parts, you know, you've obviously really enjoyed kind of getting into knowing what's kind of the latest things that are coming out in music technology. What has been like the thing that you're like, whoa, you've just been impressed that you've heard of recently, like, whoa, I didn't realize something cool like this is in development. What has been like that thing that you're kind of like, whoa, that blew me away?
Yeah, absolutely. There's always so many things, like literally there's new innovations coming out nonstop. I think I just love audio movers. I think it's so good. It's like the plugin I was talking about for high quality audio in real time. So that blew my mind. That's one thing that has blown my mind that I use all the time and I'm still like, how is this possible? But I've just read yesterday that Apple Music are going to be supporting spatial audio, which is huge. It's like a game changer. So binaural and 360 audio is going to be available on Apple Music, and a lot of music is being re-recorded and remixed into spatialized sound, which I think is going to be insane. I don't know that much about spatial audio as a whole, like personally, but I'm really excited to listen to that and to jump on that train. So basically, like, you know, the 5.1 or the cinematic sound where you hear things flying over your head and all that kind of stuff is going to be implemented into Apple Music, and that's gonna be really cool.
Wow, I'm so glad I asked you that question, because I'm like, just like, whoa, that's something I want to look into now and go and read my little bit of research. Like, how can I do this now with my audio? How can we recreate this? But that's awesome. So if it comes into kind of like, if you were to try to recreate that in the studio, would that be like the settings we have like on your microphone, say, like, you know, like you know, the different shapes that you can create in terms of like directional responses and stuff? Would that be kind of like similar idea that you can kind of similarly create with maybe like panning and stuff? Because like that kind of is what kind of is done as well when it comes to special effects in films as well, or you want to give your side of kind of like how could a person recreate that from the comfort of their home?
Yeah, absolutely. So essentially you have your stereo fields, right? So all the songs that are produced and released at the minute, they're in stereo. So you know you might have a guitar on the left, or you might have like your tom fills on the right, and you like put stuff in different parts of the stereo image. And what spatial audio does is it takes that and it like multiplies it. So instead of having left and right, so instead of having a left and right speaker, more traditionally when cinema sort of began using this technology, it was called 5.1. So that would be five speakers. So you have left, center, right, back left, and back right is how, and then you have the 0.1 is a subwoofer. So that gives you all the low frequencies in a separate speaker. Mm. So that's how the 5.1 side of things works. And I know 5.1, I've mixed in 5.1. I've done some cinematic sound design in that mixing environment. It's so fun doing stuff in 5.1. So basically, instead of panning from left to right, you can pan from like behind you to right in front of you on the other side. Mm. And you can do all that kind of stuff. What newer technology like Dolby Atmos uses at the minute is they actually, instead of you just telling it which speakers to go to, mm-hmm. they actually put the speakers in your room, and then all of the audio properties are objects, and then those objects are sort of coded into the speakers in such a way that if I'm in my room here and I put a speaker behind me and I've got a speaker in front of me, the distance between those two speakers would be different if I did the same thing in my living room. So if I was set up in my room, it would take, you know, less time for the thing to move because I've got less space, or it would go slower so that it would take the same amount of time to travel from one speaker to the other than in a different room. So that more advanced Dolby Atmos spatial audio is what I believe is going to be implemented, which is really insane. And the whole way that that works is like you have to encode the audio into these different object files. So when you say do it in the comfort of your own home, I don't think you can render Dolby Atmos in the comfort of your own home, but you could do a 5.1 mix on headphones if you really tried. It might be a little, it mightn't translate that well, but there's some really cool, there's such a, you can go down a big rabbit hole, like some of that, there's all these videos that Dolby have put out, where like, one of my favorite ones is a video of Lizzo hearing one of her songs in this like surround sound version for the first time. It's so cool. She's like, what the hell, this is amazing. And it's really cool. So yeah, that's my favorite new innovation as of late in the music industry.
Wow, I'm so glad I'm asking all these questions, because I feel like I'd be like, I wouldn't have known any of these things. And I think anybody listening to it is like, people are kind of like, wow, like, you know. And I think you're explaining this so well, which kind of shows like your, you know, your teachable qualities about you that you probably gained as well.
Thank you.
The audio coaching and stuff. So I'm so glad I asked you that question, and you're so super excited where the future of sound is going. And it's kind of an amazing time when you think about it in terms of like getting the full sound experience and pushing the envelope yet again. So when you think about it in terms of events, how do you think that's going to translate into live events, if that was going to be where the sound is heading as well?
Yeah, there actually have already been a couple of Dolby Atmos sound, like live sound events. I think maybe the Oscars 2 years ago was all done in Dolby Atmos.
Wow.
And it's a similar thing where the audio adapts to the room, and there's like really, it's so complex and convoluted, the whole system of it. But yeah, that is it. They're already trialing it for live events. I think there have been a couple of sort of beta live events that have implemented this. And what it essentially does is it just makes sure that wherever you are in a room, you're going to get the full experience of the sound. So if you're like, you know, you're not going to be jammed behind a speaker and only hearing the bass if you're far back in a concert arena or something like that. And it just sort of like will make sure that the whole space and the sound almost work as one, in arenas and in like home theaters and home listening. And there are a couple of also like Alexa speakers and smart speakers that support this kind of like surround audio, but they're just singular speakers, I think, but they can code the objects within and that kind of thing, which is really interesting.
That's awesome. I'm the fact that, you know, they're already starting to do this kind of live events, I think it's really gonna push the envelope again. And hopefully when gigs come back properly on, you know, we'll all kind of have integrated to that certain extent to kind of take things to the next level and kind of push from all the time that we haven't got to do live events and kind of get it to like an even better level. That'd be like, for all the time that's been wasted, here's an even more amazing and advanced event, you know, production even more. So maybe people can make up to us that way. Hopefully that'd be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Let's go back from Lisa, the music technology, you know, innovator and the audio engineer and the audio coach and all of that. And let's move back to Lisa Murray as the artist, the music artist, and yes. talk a little bit about the kind of girl. So, you know, the release of your first single that you were talking about, you said you had hit the ground running, working on your next track, and it's scheduled to be released in mid-July. So actually for our listeners, you know, this is amazing news for you guys because it's going to be kind of in alignment to your song coming out. So please tell us a little bit about your song and how it came about and kind of like is there music videos in plan in place or what should we expect?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the cool things about this really, really long lockdown that we ended up in was from sort of November onwards, I started to work again on my own music and sort of starting to apply everything that I had learned and everything that I'd studied and start to ask myself questions like, where's my sound? Where do I want to fall into place with all this stuff? Because I'd worked so much with other artists that I didn't really have my own coherent sense of, like, as an artist and as a songwriter and as a producer, this is my voice. And so I decided to spend some time working on that. And I thought that the best way to do it would be to self-produce and self-release some music. And so I put out my first single, The Kind of Girl. I put it out on the 28th of May, just gone by. Time has been such a loop since that has happened, which is really fun. So I had a great, that was such an interesting project. I produced everything from scratch myself and recorded everything here at home. And I mixed the track and then I got it mastered by Piper Payne, who's an amazing mastering engineer who's based in Nashville. And I just started to learn how to like put my music out there, find my voice, do the whole thing. And I've been really thrilled with the success of that first single. I hit 10,000 streams on Spotify in 1 week and I was buzzing because I was expecting like 10 people to listen to the song. I was not expecting anybody to care. And I got a good amount of radio play within Ireland and like some really cool press features that are, there's still a couple of them to come out and that kind of thing. So that was a really, really, really fun process. And now I'm starting the process of the second single, which is terrifying because the first single I had no expectations, right? And now I have this act to follow for my next single, which is kind of terrifying, but I'm really excited. And by the time anybody hears this, they're gonna be like, what was she talking about? Because it's out and it's fine, everything's fine. But yeah, so my next single is going to be coming out in mid-July, which is now if you're listening in the future. Yeah. And it's another self-produced track written and produced at home in my home studio. And it's kind of spicier. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit more, not, pardon the pun, edgy. It's a bit more edgy. And yeah, I really want to just, I want to keep pushing the envelope, as you say, of like my production style, getting a bit more creative and playing a little bit less safe with the next single. I think it's going to be fun. I also just dropped a live performance video of my first single, and I will be doing a lyric video for that first single soon. I just haven't gotten around to it because my life is a mess, but I will. And for this next release, I really want to be very, very coordinated with all my video stuff. I want to have a really cool music video, live video, and potentially like one of my friends is a choreographer and we're probably going to have a bit of choreography in it. So, you know, it's going to be spicy. So yeah, that's all I can really say about the next single. I'm still in the production process of it. And I'm very excited with how it's going so far. I think it's going to be even more unique, I think, than my first single in a cool way.
That's awesome. I'm so glad we're getting some feedback here because, kind of what's to come, any kind of information at all about kind of like the music video aesthetic at all, because I know you're kind of all about aesthetic. Can we get a little bit of like, have you any vision in terms of like what color textures, what clothing can we expect from Lisa Murray's music video?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one thing that I like to do, and it's something that I always did when I was younger, I would just love to just dress up in really random costumes and portray different characters, and that's something that I'm planning to do with my artist project. Obviously I've only had one release so far, but when I was doing the shoot for that first release, I was the song is about a girl who is the kind of manic pixie dream girl aesthetic, like think 500 Days of Summer, think Penny Lane from Almost Famous, and these girls who just sort of like burst into your life and they're like amazing and they change this like emotionally stunted boy's life, right? That's how, it's the whole kind of concept behind the song. And when I was doing the cover art and stuff, I wanted to be the girl from the song. Yeah, so it's all about, sorry, I think I might have cut out a little bit there. So yeah, with that whole manic pixie dream girl aesthetic, I really wanted to, in the first single, I wanted to be the girl from the song. That was the whole concept behind it. And the song is quite based on my actual life, so it is similar enough to me, but the sort of outfit and the portrayal of the character in the artwork and in all the promo shots, it's not necessarily Lisa Murray who you're talking to, who is this like engineer producer person who knows about spatial audio, but I'm this girl who, you know, would reel in these kinds of emotionally stunted men and change their life and all that kind of stuff. So the next song is a bit edgier and a bit more spicy. So I feel like the character that will accompany that song will also be like a darker kind of a mood. And yeah, maybe a bit more adventurous in terms of portrayal.
Ooh, I'm actually super excited to like see the contrast between the two pieces of work and how it's going to come out on visually, like on the screen with the two of them. And it's nice to hear like the diversity you have as well in kind of like your approach, which kind of keeps people very excited and interested to see what you're going to do next. So I love that. Absolutely love that. Thank you so much for sharing. We're going to jump into the part of the podcast called I'm a Diva 5 Questions. Are you ready, Lisa?
I am.
Great. So number one of I'm a Diva 5 Questions is, what's the best pep talk or phrase another diva has given you?
Yeah, this is an interesting one. And I was racking my brain about this when I saw the question. And I think one of the best pep talks, I'm the kind of person who does give pep talks to other people. I don't receive them that often. I kind of give myself pep talks. But when I was being mentored by Sylvia Massey, when I was at Berkeley, we were talking about the whole like music industry and how you get your foot in the door and all that kind of stuff. And she just said to me, she was like, it doesn't matter how much you know or how much technical jargon you can spit out, you just need to be a good hang. You just need to be somebody who's fun to be around. You're going to be spending maybe 10 to 18 hours a day every day in a row with people in a windowless room like doing studio sessions, so you just have to have a good attitude and you just have to be a good hang. And that has stuck with me for so long, because when you're in a more technical side of music, it can make you feel like you constantly need to be studying, refreshing, like knowing exactly what like compressor you're using, knowing settings off by heart and all this kind of stuff. But what I found really interesting with that was like, just relax a little bit, because personality is so important in the music industry. And once you are a good person to talk to and hang out with, everything else will come with time.
I love that. Thank you. Wow. I feel like that's bringing a lot of value. So number two, what do you think the ultimate diva day or night consists of doing?
That's so interesting. And I don't have one answer, because I'm a diva in very multiple senses of the word. And I like to bring my diva self to every aspect of what I do. But I think an ultimate diva day or night is just getting something, is creating something that you love and being happy and enjoying the creative process. And maybe it's, you know, getting a really great vocal take or getting all your vocals done, or maybe it's putting together a really great beat that you're super proud of. Maybe it's learning something new for the first time, like learning a new plugin, learning a new piece of gear, or writing something killer. And I think that whatever you do, if you give it your all and if you get to that point of happiness and contentment with what you've created, that's like the ultimate diva feeling.
Love that. Number three, what is your ultimate diva song that, you know, gets you into that like diva energy?
Okay, so it's not necessarily a song, but it is the This Is Lizzo playlist from Spotify. Whenever I need to be hyped up for something, I literally just put Lizzo on. She is just the ultimate hype queen. And every time I listen to her music, I feel so ready to take on the world. But if I had to pick one song, probably Good as Hell by Lizzo.
Awesome. Thank you. So number four, can you describe your ultimate diva comeback? So it could be like a comeback that somebody said to you. It could be a comeback from a place that you came back from, where you kind of bounced back from maybe, you know, something that was like a really, really thing that beat you down, you know, something. So anything that resonates.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I feel my ultimate diva comeback was definitely a situational one. I won't go into details, but I had a very unpleasant collaboration experience a little while ago with a big project that I was working on. The project had never actually came to fruition in a public sense, but it is something that is going to be coming down the line at some point. But yeah, I basically had to separate from that collaboration because it wasn't benefiting me or my artistic vision. And I went on to complete the project in like a demo sense. And that was a great feeling. It was when I was at Berklee, and I also got an award for the project, which was really great. It like really reassured me that I had made the right decisions. And yeah, so I guess that was probably a big deal to come back. But I think when it comes to these kinds of comebacks, I don't think it's ever healthy to fixate on revenge or proving a point to somebody or proving somebody wrong. I think all you really should do in those scenarios is focus on you, focus on what your vision is, complete the work for you. And then anything else that comes as a result of that is just a bonus.
That's really, really well said. And I'm glad you have that kind of mentality. And I think more divas should have that type of mentality. So hopefully anybody listening will take something from that. The last question of I'm a Diva 5 questions is, what would be your diva dream? Anything at all, don't hold back.
Okay, so my diva dream would be to be probably on the Billboard 100 charts. That'd be pretty cool. Either a project I've worked on as a producer or a writer, or one of my own artist projects. That would be the ultimate dream.
I'm 100% certain that you will achieve that. So
oh, thank you.
No doubt. So let's move away from the I'm a Diva 5 questions and move a little bit back into everything that's been kind of taking place in your musical career and all of the growth that you've been doing and kind of your experience as a female in the music industry. Do you feel like in the tech world, there's been like a different kind of mentality towards you as a female? Have you felt any kind of sort of like, you know, differentiation? Is there been like a bigger imbalance of females to males in your course in Spain? You know, like what have you noticed that's different over there that they might be doing that maybe Ireland could be doing? So yeah, let's start there.
Yeah, absolutely. There is always in this day and age, and unfortunately in this day and age, there is a huge imbalance in the music industry, especially in the music tech industry. Like the most recent stats from the USC Annenberg Inclusion Initiative that comes out every year looks at, you know, the Grammy nominees and in the top projects in like the industry from that year, and like 2% of the producers are women, which is insane because I know a lot of amazing, iconic female producers that are just not being represented at that high level. So that's definitely like, so it's something that is very important to me, like with my work with She Said So Dublin and with She Knows Tech, I really make such an active effort to empower as many people as possible to like get into the space and educate themselves and give it a go, because it's a lot of fun. And if you can stick it out, you'll really reap the rewards. Yeah. But yeah, in terms of like treatment, there is one of those things where, you know, if you're the only woman in a room, which happens to me so often, sometimes it's just obvious, you know, and you kind of, the environment makes it very obvious that you are the woman who's there or you're the girl who's there. But I've been quite lucky in a lot of my collaborations and in a lot of my work where it's so chill, and like I'm really well accepted. And I think a lot of that is because I'm quite knowledgeable, and when you can be knowledgeable and stand your ground very firmly, very quickly people learn not to fuck with you. Yeah. I don't know if I'm allowed to swear on this podcast.
Yeah, you're allowed.
But yeah, so people kind of, you know, they can sense it quite quickly. There will obviously be the odd person who won't make you feel welcome, or who will have an issue with you being there, and it can either be, you know, blatant, or it can be very subliminal. But yeah, I think that the combination of being a woman and also being very young
yes.
has led to a couple of scenarios where it's sort of been like, why are you saying words? Like, do you, what?
Yeah.
But then in most of my collaborations, especially with male peers and male co-workers, has been really positive. And two of my best mentors that I've had so far have been men, and I would not be who I am without having worked with those men and them telling me exactly, like, and them also respecting the fact that I am a woman and that things will be different for me. Like, I got some advice from my mentor, he's the program director of the master's program I did, his name is Pablo Munguia, and I went to him recently for advice about something, and we had a conversation about it, and he was like, I just want you to know this is going to be a 10 times harder of a conversation to have because you're a woman. He's like, and that's so unfortunate, but I just want you to be prepared for that. And like, there is a lot of really, really, really great allies in the recording industry and in the music production space that I'm so thankful for. And there's a lot of men that I wouldn't be where I am without their support and without their guidance. But there is still, for every amazing person, there is still those trolls who, you know, pop up in the comment sections of a collaboration with a big audio company, or there'll be just people who will be a bit hostile towards you. And the biggest thing for me that I've noticed in my work as an engineer and as a producer is the assumptions. So sometimes you'll walk into a room, or you'll be in a room setting something up, and the band will come in or the artist will come in, and you are the last person they expect to be sitting at the console. You know, they sort of see you and you can just tell that they're like, who's this person? Like, are they gonna make me tea or coffee, or like, you know, this kind of thing. So it isn't easy, but it's I think there are some really great people out there who are fighting the good fight.
I feel like everything you said is very on point, and in terms of like kind of understanding that there's going to be some barriers that you're going to have to kind of learn to kind of either overcome, or sometimes you're going to have to kind of you know, overlook for the sake of kind of getting your job done, and kind of, well, like you said, focusing on your performance rather than kind of proving anything to anyone. So that's kind of the most important thing, and I'm glad that you're kind of shedding some light on this. As we're moving towards the last question, is there anything at all that you want to kind of mention before we finish up the episode? Is there anything you want to leave the note on, any other music kind of mentions that you want to do on behalf of yourself, or anything at all that you want to leave the note on?
No, I just want to say a quick inspirational note for anyone who's listening to this, who's sort of thinking, oh, maybe I should like produce my next record myself, or maybe I should try to do a mix of something. Just go for it, because everybody starts somewhere. Most people have no idea what's going on, and it's just a matter of diving deep into it, having a willingness to learn, having an open mind, and just, there's so many resources out there. Like, look at She Said So Dublin, look at She Knows Tech. We have so many amazing resources that are available for people to learn from us for free, to work with us for free. So definitely don't be shy. And there are so many great female-focused initiatives out there that will really help any budding or younger creators, or even people who are just newer to this creation process, to really like dive deep in and learn so much about the world that we're in with the music industry, and yeah, and just how you can grow and feel really empowered in your music making process, or whatever it is you do.
This is incredible, everything you just said. And to anybody listening, you know, we're after hearing so much support that there's out there for anybody wanting to start out, like you said, or wants to kind of get into it and, you know, get involved in some way or another. So thank you so much, Lisa, for mentioning this. Thank you so much for coming on. You brought so much value to this episode. Really appreciate it to talk to you. I can't wait for your music video to come out. That's the thing I'm waiting for the most, because I feel like you got me so excited in terms of like, I just know it's going to be something really, really fun. And it's going to be, like you said, a little bit spicy. So thank you so much for coming on to the show. And thank you so much to our listeners. And until next time, this is Edgy V.
I'm a Diva podcast launched their Patreon account. So if you like what we do and want to support us, head over to our link, and there will be some exclusive content for exclusive subscribers. So head over there now. And thank you so much for your support.